novelist. You might know her for A Greater World, Kurinji Flowers. Her latest book, set in a thinly disguised Kintbury over 100 years ago, is The Green Ribbons. I was just reading at the start there, reading out your CV, basically, wasn't I? the fact that you were a... Well, first of all, what exactly does a global marketing director do on a daily basis?
Well, I worked for big global companies. I worked for a long time for Procter & Gamble on brands such as Pampers and Fairy Liquid and Ariel. And I worked for them in the north of England, up in Newcastle, and then in Paris and in Brussels. I also worked for Kimberly Clark and for United Biscuits. So all kinds of everyday types of products. So,
but doing what? Doing what with those Pampers or those biscuits?
Marketing. Right. So developing advertising, determining what the pricing should be, the basic strategic positioning for the brands, and trying to ensure that we... improve them as much as possible to keep consumers happy.
Which sounds really interesting and actually quite good fun.
Yes.
And yet you threw it all away to write novels.
I did. And in fact, I had my own strategic consultancy for about 15 years. Mm. So I worked independently advising companies about innovation and how to improve their culture to make it more innovative. And I've been doing that until very recently, but I've now decided I'm focusing 100% on the writing.
Right. Will you miss that? I mean, did you enjoy that, or was it just to keep your hand in until you were certain?
Really? No, I probably will miss it. I did love it. And in fact, I had the big test last week when a former client of mine called me up and asked me if I could do a project with them. And I took a deep breath and said, no, I'm full-time writing now. So, and I don't have any regrets about that because I do love just... because there's more to writing than writing the book itself. I also have to be a marketer to get it out there into the world. I spend a lot of time promoting the book on social media, for example. Which was obviously a learning curve at the beginning.
Well, you take the words out of my mouth because I was going to ask you whether the previous career informed this one. You think it definitely gives you an edge then, an advantage?
I think it helps, but it's very, very different marketing books from marketing consumer goods. And it's also very different marketing your own baby.
I see the own baby thing, but I don't see why a book is that different. Isn't that a consumer item? You know, I either need to change my baby's nappy, or I need to eat a biscuit, or I need to read a book.
You need to read a book. Yes, you can argue that it is the same. I think it may be a mental barrier on my part, because probably driven more by the fact that it is my baby. And also, I'm used to the kinds of brands that I worked on. I had very big budgets to support them, and that's very different from the whole publishing world, which is...
I'm impressed you can do it yourself anyway, because, you know, in performers in show business, the idea is that they have to have an agent or a manager, because although they may not be shy people, they will be very shy about banging their own drum. Whereas they could do it for somebody else, but not for them, and somebody else needs to do... But, you know, you're banging your own drum here, really, aren't you?
I know. Yeah. It's not easy.
No, not even a nicely brought up British person.
That's right, yes.
So tell me about the mechanics of that, then. You know, how do you give your books the best chance of success in that way?
I do a lot of networking, I think, amongst readers and other writers. I'm a member of the Historical Novel Society and the Romantic Novelists Association, and I do I go to conferences and things and meet people, and there's a wonderful community of authors out there who are all very supportive of each other. I use Twitter, I use Facebook a lot, too much some of the time, because it's so easy to get distracted. But I also, what I love most of all is actually sitting in front of the screen and writing. Mm. And then, of course, there's a lot of time has to be spent researching and reading.
Well, yes, and presumably a lot more than people who write fiction set in Reading or Slough or whatever, you know, in the current day. So what is the fascination? Why is it worth doing all that extra work and, you know, writing about the past?
What I like about writing about the past is I've always been interested in history, but I like the distance that it gives. I feel I can still deal with very modern topics, but I like the fact that there is a certain separation, and I like putting myself into a completely different world. So I'm drawn to historical times, and I'm drawn to distant places. And it just happened that I didn't set out to be a historical writer. My first book just happened to be set in the 1920s. And then I discovered that I really felt comfortable writing about the past. I liked it a lot. And I do enjoy doing the research. So it gives you, if I was writing just, you know, doing an 8-hour day of solely churning out words.
I thought that's what you guys had to do anyway. I thought come hell or high water, by tea time today, I will have done my quota of 1,000 or 1,500, whatever it is, words for the day.
Yes, I'm less disciplined than that. There are some days when I might write 6,000 words, and there are some days when I don't write at all, but I do keep up quite a productive output.
Well, 6,000 is very impressive, yeah.
Well, sometimes I just get on, you know, if you get on a roll and you get lost, you lose track of time.
What do you do if it's really going well and you simply have got to stop for some pressing engagement?
Well, you have to stop, then I just pick it up again.
Is it as good when you pick it up, or do you lose something?
No, I think what I always do when I pick it up is I read back through the last little bit that I've written to get back into the flow, and then just go with it. And often it can be better because you need to get that little sense of distance and come back and look at it fresh.
We're almost back to the burglar again, really.
Yes.
Maybe not quite that drastic.
No, I hope not.
And is it at all possible to analyse why some days you can't get it typed quickly enough and other days you could sit there all day and not a lot happens?
I think sometimes it's just, you know, it's a mood-related thing. Sometimes it's because something happens in front of the screen. I'm sitting typing and I suddenly just get really excited and carried away by something and I don't want to leave it. Whereas there are other days when I sit there and think, oh, God, I have to force myself to write. Because I don't believe in writer's block. I need to say that from the beginning.
You believe in writer's excuses.
Yes, I think procrastination, and I am an absolute mistress of procrastination. So, but there are days when I have to say, Claire, just sit there and you're not going to move until you've got words out. And once the words start, they carry on.
Well, will you sit there a little bit longer, because there's a couple of other areas I'd like to talk to you about, in a few minutes.
Delighted.
Okay, we'll come back on that in just a bit then. This is Claire Flynn, author of the new book, The Green Ribbons, from Kinbury. We'll talk again after we've done some travel and some weather, and played you a couple of great tunes like this one from Roy Orbison on BBC Radio Berkshire.